and another Wednesday rolls around. Hump day. Time for American Radio on 90.3 WHBC.
The second best day of the year. Of the week.
After Friday? Or 2020? No, I don't think anybody would say that this is the greatest year ever. That's for sure.
No.
But we're having fun on our own. Just still, you know, basically doing what we do here at WHPC. And, of course, what we have been doing on Wednesdays is presenting a series of albums from two separate lists. The top 500 of the top 40. And
the not top 500 of the
Right. You can call it that. We've been calling it the alternative top 40. Albums that didn't make the Billboard top 40 charts. And it was the albums that didn't that started this whole inspiration in the first place, but that's when we decided that we were going to fatten it out and add another 500 albums that were popular. But the phase that we are in now, like we've started this in, we didn't start doing this in 1964. We started coverage in 1964, although it feels like we've been doing this since 1964. But
yes, I was doing it in utero.
Yeah, I'll take all the help I can get. And when we started like laying out the albums, I began to realize how many records there were that I was picking from this era. And although we moved through, say, the early part of the 60s at a reasonable clip, there's an awful lot of great classic albums from that era that causes this point in time to move more slowly than, say, the later eras, 90s, 2000s, 2010s even, where it's harder to find things that you would call flat-out classic. Now, it's possible that it could be my own prejudice because this is the music that comes from my own youth when I would have derived my own sense of taste. But I do think that most of what I'm selecting is backed up, if not only by a whole heck of a lot of other critics.
They support you in this choice.
I feel like I feel safe in the fact that I've got so many albums that come from this area. Well, here's what I'm talking about. I wanted to compile a list to see just how many albums it is that I have chosen for the year 1971 in particular. Because we've been on 71 now for quite a while.
It was a good year.
Yeah, we've already, I think we've gone through like 16 or 17 albums and we're only up to July. So we're at the halfway point. So I did a count. And there are 10 albums that we've selected that are from the alternative top 40 list, or we could call it the list, which is, I guess, well, the albums that didn't make the top 40.
Yeah, don't belabor it.
Yeah, right. We'll just leave it at that. No, there's 10 on that list. We've covered 6 of them already. Today's going to be the 7th. Albums from 71 that we included were Little Feat, Crazy Horse, that Crazy Can album that we played for 2 weeks.
A lot of people might argue that one.
Right. That is like basically one of the places we could argue. Today's going to be another section where they might see reason to argue with me. But Leonard Cohen, John Prine, Gil Scott-Heron. Coming up, by the way, on that list of alternative top 40, albums that did not make the top 40, are albums by Pink Floyd and David Bowie, superstars who were not yet superstars in 1971. So their releases did not chart high enough to qualify as hits.
Right.
So an album like Hunky Dory by David Bowie or an album by like Metal by Pink Floyd will be on our list, but they are part of the alternative series because they weren't that popular at the time of release. So there you go. In comparison to that, we have 33 albums that we selected that did make the top 40. 33. So that means I've got 43 albums that I've got to cover just to cover 1971 in what I consider to be legitimate fashion. If you add in the fact that about 5 or 6 of those albums are double albums, that means that it will take me an entire year to cover an entire year. That's pretty crazy. If I was to do that for the entire stretch of time from 1964 to today, that means this would be 50 years for me to basically convey the whole thing. It would take, but that's not the case. It's just that 1971 is that strong, that
heavy laden,
awesome, and heavy laden with great music,
great material.
That all being said, albums like this one, which we are about to cover today, offer you, this is where you can call me out for perhaps over-representing the early 70s, if I'm wrong. And I say that because this is about as obscure of an album as you are likely to find. I scoured high and low looking for something that I could find that was going to take me a little bit deeper into the 70s. And one area where I thought that I would maybe be able to find, like, strike a little vein would be in soul music. And boy, when I hit this record, I knew I found something. The artist is O.V. Wright. And the album is entitled A Nickel and a Nail and the Ace of Spades. It's a terrible album title. The cover is even worse. The cover looks like it was put together by an eighth grader with an Ace of Spades card and a picture of a nickel and a picture of a nail. It really is as simplistic as it gets. It's also next to impossible to find. I think that if you were lucky these days, you might be able to find an O.V. Wright collection. But I'm going to try to see if I can convince you before the show is over that you're going to want to dig and find this album. All right. I want to read to you what I wrote about the album before we get started, because the album itself is relatively short anyway, so we have some time. My own discovery of O.V. Wright justifies every minute of research that I've done for this project so far. By my own rule, this list can contain virtually any release since 1964 that never made the top 40 albums list, which means there are literally millions of potential inclusions where I will never, ever hear even a single note. Due diligence forces me to research all sorts of unusual avenues, and on one such detour, I was stumbling down the dirt road of Southern soul music, overturning various stones as I went along looking, hoping for some miraculous find, and it happened. O.V. Wright represents a long-forgotten pot of gold. Imagine a singer with the tone, range, and control of Sam Cooke, coupled with the muscle of Otis Redding, backed by a great band playing sympathetic arrangements that sound as if they are extracted straight from the classic Stax playbook. Wright wasn't ahead of his time so much as he was of it, but he had a voice better than just about anybody then or since. Even Al Green would have struggled to keep up with O.V. Wright. But Wright's luck was abysmal. Like Sam Cooke, he started as a brilliant gospel singer. With James Carr, he was a member of the Redemption Harmonizers. And his abandonment of sacred for secular was interpreted as an insult to God himself. Struggling with the judgment of his peers and personal demons due to his treason, he could only hope for the public embrace that was granted to Cooke, Aretha Franklin, and numerous others. In that pursuit, he was the first artist to record That's How Strong My Love Is, and his version was both brilliant and definitive. But record company infighting derailed his expectations. Meanwhile, a subsequent radically simplified version by Otis Redding lifted the latter to fame and glory. A follow-up cover of Redding's version by the Rolling Stones simply added insult to injury, a 1-2 punch from which he never fully recovered. Wright sings with his pain intact, leaving a mark on anybody who may be lucky enough to stumble on his work. His early albums are now so rare that finding a copy is well-nigh impossible, and even information is unreliable and vague. After spending considerable time searching out anything at all, the best I could do was find an extremely rare Japanese 5-CD compilation of his 4 albums, plus an extra disc that compiles all of his singles, which includes That's How Strong My Love Is, by the way. Listen to any of his recordings, and you'll be able to justify such a purpose. The title and album cover for A Nickel and a Nail and the Ace of Spades may be among the worst ever concocted, but I'm not here to rate artwork or the absence of intelligent marketing skills. I'm here to talk about music, and I haven't stopped talking about O.V. Wright since I made a discovery of his work. This is Southern soul music at its most powerful, providing the missing link between Sam Cooke and Al Green. Aided by Willie Mitchell and the Memphis Horns, this music is timeless, as all great music ought to be. For all the talk about Memphis soul, I don't believe the conversation can be made without Hole without paying significant homage to Ovie Wright and this ridiculously titled album that contains some of the best Memphis-style soul I've ever heard. Let's get this party started. On American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here is Ovie Wright with Let My Baby Ride. That's what I'm talking about. Ovie Wright. I mean, that's just the opening track. But I mean, this album, you'll see, it just never lets up. There's something about it that this, the weird quality to me is that this is 1971 when this came out. And it's actually kind of like late to the game because this kind of soul music was incredibly hot in like the late 60s. But at this point, it was like that golden era seemed to maybe have begun to like lose its luster. But it's kind of like Ovie Wright didn't get it yet because he never got famous. So he held on and he kept doing what other people were giving up on. And it's just stunning to me the way that he does it. It's obviously it's Willie Mitchell doing the production because you can hear the Al Green side of it.
Right. Yeah.
And it
just goes to show how much Willie Mitchell brought to the game.
To the game, right. Exactly. And with the High Records rhythm section, the same people that played on Al Green's albums, who was, by the way, the person who was most responsible for changing that classic soul sound from the 60s style that it had into the 70s style. It was Al Green who really pushed that transition more than any other human being. What Ovie Wright is doing is he's holding on to more of that original sound than Al did. He keeps that grittier, darker side.
Yeah, more of a working class sort of a vibe.
Yeah, but the Memphis horns are still there, you know, doing everything that they do. And it's worth mentioning also that Ovie Wright wrote that song. So it's not like he's only an interpreter. Now, he doesn't write much. A lot of the songs are credited to other people, particularly somebody named Diedrich Malone, I'm not even sure who that is, but Diedrich is responsible for writing over half of the material on this record, including this next track, which is entitled Born All Over, which is also credited as writing-wise to Johnny Copeland and Diedrich Malone. This track is called Born All Over on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC. We had a little bit of time there to solve that mystery. And I'm telling you, the depth of this album keeps going. That vein gets bigger and bigger with the more that I, you know, try to research it. Because I'm researching this as we're going here as well. And it turns out that Diedrich Malone is a pseudonym for Don Roby, the record producer and record label head for Duke Records and Peacock Records, the guy responsible for finding... what's his name? The fiddle player, guitar player, Texas. I just mentioned his
name.
Gatemouth. Thank you. Gatemouth Brown. The man behind Hound Dog with Big Mama Thornton. And apparently a songwriter. And he wrote that song with Johnny Copeland. You know, basically, I can't call him a superstar guitar player because he never really became that incredibly famous except among other guitar players. But he's the daddy of Shemekiah Copeland. And they wrote that song together. Born All Over. All right. Next up is one of the songs that gave the album its title. The title, A Nickel and a Nail and the Ace of Spades, is really a combination of two songs that Ovi Wright recorded that were intended to be hit singles that were never anything more than minor regional hits in certain pockets of the South. And that's pretty much when the album came out, was to basically try to appeal to that market. And it sold. Obviously, this record did not chart. I mean, that's goes without saying. It was a marginalized market to begin with. Distribution was horrible. And since he wasn't, you know, touring on the Chitlin circuit on any regular basis, it was very difficult for anybody to even hear his music. Although I've read stories in like Oxford American Magazine and stuff about people who actually had seen him live. And they, there's one article in particular in that magazine just basically said that it was almost like he was life changing to see him, because he basically somehow, in the way that he performed, seemed to represent the entire diaspora of what was happening with African Americans in the United States. And he brought such a power and a prideful dignity with him on stage, although it was quite obvious that he was struggling and very poor and, you know, basically sitting in the audience waiting to go on before his shows and playing to small audiences because he was unknown. Well, here's one of his, I want to use the word hit singles, but the one that provided part of the album title. This one credited exclusively to Don Roby as Diedrich Malone, the song Ace of Spades on American at Radio 90.3 WHBC. Entitled Ace of Spades by Overton Virtus Wright. That's his full name.
There you go.
Virtus, V-E-R-T-I-S.
Sounds Latin.
Right? Doesn't it? The whole name does. Overton Virtus. You can hear every ounce of the gospel influence coming through on every one of these songs, and his range is incredible.
Powerful. Like, powerful, strong voice.
I can't help but compare him to Al Green, because there's so many comparative things in the song arrangements, in the stylization. But there's, like I said, there's a bit more of a punch. Al Green has a way of coming off sexier. There's no doubt about that. And I am not going to disparage Al Green by any, you know, because I that would be absurd. I mean, Al Green is one of my favorite artists of all time. The beauty here is discovering the existence of somebody who is closely related to him in terms of musical arrangement, who is able to basically find a whole new palette of colors using the same tools. And that is what makes this album special. Now, something that happened, I guess, somewhat often, especially in the R&B market in the late 60s, where these artists were putting out albums, which were really nothing more than another way for them to distribute their hit singles. And there was an earlier album that he put out, that Ovi Wright put out, that was called 8 Men, 4 Women, based on a single. And that album, just like everything that he released, didn't really sell very well. So when the time came to release Nico and Anel and the Ace of Spades, they decided that maybe it would be smart to, you know, litter some of the older hits onto this album, maybe to help promote it, since it didn't work the first time. There's a lot of people who have like Townes Van Zandt, for one, the Texas songwriter. I could find maybe him doing the same song on about 5 or 6 of his different albums. So it's not exclusively R&B artists who do it. It's just that it's not a common practice, except among artists who are having a hard time getting the best material heard. And it must hurt like hell when you have something you consider to be a fantastic song and you watch it get totally ignored by the general public. Imagine I was heartbroken when his version of That's How Strong My Love Is.
Well, he had a lot more regional success than national success.
Yes, but even regional was like very like small pockets, certain towns around the Chitlin circuit. And like I've seen, you know, That's How Strong My Love Is was his. And then he gets to sit back and watch Otis Redding become a superstar.
Right.
On the basis of him releasing that song as one of his first singles. And then the Rolling Stones put it out.
And drugs also played a part in his, his issues.
Yeah. I mean, he suffered from depression because of all these issues and these reasons. And they said that, you know, it was drugs basically were holding him back. And it basically ended his life at a very young age. I think he was like maybe
41.
Yeah. It's so sad. So sad. Well, here's that single we were talking about. And you'll notice that another funny thing about Ovi Wright is that he's not afraid to let loose on some very unusual topics, as is implied by the title, 8 Men, 4 Women, on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
I dreamed that love was a crime. I was alone, so lonely and blue. You know why? Because 8 men and 4 women, Lord, they found me guilty of loving you. As they were taking me away, you were taking, I saw you when you were taking the witness stand. You know what? I heard the lawyer when he asked you, my love, do you really love that man? It was 8 men and 4 women.
Guilty.
How could they be so blind?
Guilty.
How could they? I know they sat there and called true love a cry. Would kill me. Running tears rolled down my cheek. I felt so sorry for you. You know why? Because in my heart I knew. Oh yes, baby, I knew that they would find you guilty too. Judge, Your Honor, and to the jury, I intend to prove beyond a shadow of doubt that we are innocent and true love is not a crime.
the jury of love. A mean jury, a mean jury. But oh, that's the jury of love. Every time I kiss a woman, I just sit and hold a loving hand. I thank the Lord up above for making woman for man. Oh, every time she thrills me like only a sweet woman can. Shop fit to make woman for a man. Ooh. He didn't have to do it, but he did it. I thank the Lord today. Somebody to keep me company in the midnight hour. Somebody I can tell all my troubles to. He could have made another river. Made another tree, but he knew I would be lonely, so he took a rib in his hand. He walked out and rolled up his great big sleeve and said, I believe I'll make woman for a man. Oh, he didn't have to do it, but he did.
Looking through his catalog, Heidi, it's interesting that I'm noticing that the best stuff, like he was on High Records for the latter part of his career until he died. And he was on smaller labels before that when he was with, you know, Roby, I guess, on whatever subsidiary he originally appeared on. But the albums that seem to appeal the most to me are on a tiny label called Backbeat, which I don't think I've ever heard of Backbeat until I heard of O.V. Wright. But the two albums of his that I deeply fell in love with, this one and an album that was released in 1973 called Memphis Unlimited. Both of those came out on Backbeat Records. And I think you can hear as this progresses exactly what it is that I'm, that has struck me so much about what it is that his raw talent is. What were you saying? Now, the other, you were finding some of his music as you were looking it up.
Oh, I don't know. I found some label called Fat Possum.
Yeah.
I think it's a British label.
Yeah, they do an awful lot of re-releases and such like that.
Yeah.
I know these days most people don't really worry about whether or not they have to own the original vinyl or nobody wants to buy CDs any longer. But you can find his stuff on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes. You can download tracks. So it's certainly there. It's just not there in the forefront, because if you're going to be searching for R&B from the early 70s, you're going to be seeing a whole bunch of Al Green, but, you know, not very much of people like O.V. Wright. Even Otis Rush gets a little bit more recognition for sure. Another person who I discovered when going deep, and who also fits into this family of the Willie Mitchell singers, so to speak. We'll get to that in another show. Meanwhile, let's continue with the music of O.V. Wright with this track, credited to Don Bryant, called I Can't Take It on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Crying all night. The rain sure sound loud on my window pane. Thunder nearly knocked me to my knees. Oh, I can't take it. Oh no, another thing, a bag all packed. Sitting there by the door, I hear the taxicab outside blowing. I saw a ticket, the bus leaves about four. We had a fight last night, I know, I know. There's some other reason why she wanna go.
Listen to that song close enough with the way O.V. Wright sings it and the subject matter, and it can make the hair on your arm stand up.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy powerful. Now, that has all to do with the songwriter now. I mentioned that was a Don Bryant song. Don started out as a singer at High Records as well. And he had a career. I think he released only one album in like the late 60s that kind of went nowhere. But he was writing a lot of his own material. And once Al Green hit, a lot of the other artists, O.V. Wright included, kind of got pushed aside while they promoted Al Green. And that happened to Don Bryant too. But Bryant had a talent as a songwriter that kept his career alive. He's the guy that wrote I Can't Stand the Rain.
Oh, great song.
For Ann Peebles.
Yes.
So he had the material that he was able to supply to some of the other artists at High, which kept him going at least at some level where he was able to make some money. And he wrote that incredibly awesome song that we just heard that O.V. Wright interpreted. Rather stunning. Next track up is actually written by O.V. Wright with somebody named James Seawood. It's called Afflicted on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Thank you.
They say I'm afflicted for caring for you. When they say afflicted, they mean I'm messed up in the head. But oh, it's not really that, baby. It's not really that, baby. I'm crazy about you. That's all it is, baby. You see, I work 7 days a week. I work 7 days a week for you. Every payday, baby, I bring all my money to you. But oh, oh, when I get home, you won't believe this, but I have to eat from the can. Oh, everybody say I'm crazy, baby, but I won't only do that for you, baby. I'll die for you. Here's another thing. Do you remember old Joe? I know you do, baby. He was once my best friend. You ran away with Joe, and all the money got. You and Joe came back home. I opened the door and took you in. Oh, yes, I did. Oh, everybody's been talking about me, baby. But oh, I'm crazy about you. But I love you from the bottom of my heart. Oh, they say I'm afflicted. Oh, they say I'm messed up all in my head. But oh, it's not that, baby. It's not that, baby. I'm just crazy about you. La, 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 la.
Right there is exactly what Ovie Wright stands for, more than just about any other soul singer that I can think of. He tells a literal story.
He's good at that.
Yeah, he names names.
Discretion is not his game.
It's rather incredible. I mean, everybody else would maybe turn that into something like a song about the heart and being lonely. You left me, baby. You ran off with my best friend. I mean, that's rather common. But when you know that the guy's name is Joe, he goes, you remember Joe? I'm sure you do. And then he gets into the story about, you know, them running away together, and then the embarrassment and the shame that comes down when they return. And it's just remarkable. And it's something that he could do that I think other soul singers would have like been embarrassed to do. You know, he wasn't, you know, it wasn't like there was like, not so much that shame wasn't part of his game, but that he had the strength to convey the truth. I remember reading somewhere that Willie Mitchell like considered Ovie Wright to be the best singer that he ever worked with, but he was just too trouble laden and too difficult. But he said, I mean, I remember, I can't remember what the source was, but I'm certain I remember seeing those words coming from Willie Mitchell. And the Willie Mitchell, being the producer that he is, one of the best producers of Southern soul music of all time, that's saying something if you're saying that this guy is maybe was the best singer that you ever produced, which is exactly why he's on our list for the alternative top 40, because the music proves it. All right, let's keep going through this. Another Don Robey song picks up from here. It's called When You Took Your Love From Me on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
wings from a bird, knowing he can't fly. Would you take the ball from a little bitty baby, and you know he's gonna cry? Look here. Would you take the fish out of the water, knowing the little fella's gonna die? Would you take the cane from a blind man, and you know he ain't got no eye? Oh baby, can't you see? Sweet love, oh baby's hemming.
I think you better hit that old lonesome, lonesome, lonesome trail. I got to leave. Oh, baby, I'm wondering, how do you expect for me to make that? I don't believe I will.
That, of course, is the song that provided half of the album title, Nickel and a Nail, and Ace of Spades by Ovie Wright, which we've been playing the album in its entirety for this show, and we're just about done. We've got one song left. You got to admit, playing
this
album.
Sorry to see it go.
Really, me too. I mean, every time I hear this album, it kind of brings joy to me because I feel like I could just, I love turning people onto it because I'm pretty sure that it's something that most people are not going to be familiar with.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's
an overlooked gem.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, honestly, was there a dud on the album?
Not for me.
I mean, really, every song is great. He would be dead in less than 10 years' time.
Sad.
Yet this is just so sad because this album obviously captures him in his most honest and most expressive prime. He sounds vital here. And I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed it, and I really hope we turned you on to something that maybe you might want to go a little bit deeper and check out the music of Ovie Wright. Make yourself up a deep soul playlist, and maybe you can make Ovie Wright, you know, part of it, because it's history that is beginning to get gray at the edges, and familiarity is the only thing that's going to basically salvage it. So please check it out. See if you can find yourself some Ovie Wright to listen to. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us. And I guess the last song sums up exactly what my own thoughts are about Ovie Wright and his very short-lived career. It's called Don't Take It Away on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. See you later on in the week on Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Style. Woo, we baby, sure worthwhile.